Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on the biggest albums in rock history.
Excuse me.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's The Last Word on the first successful rock opera. I'm Redbeard from InTheStudio.net, and surprisingly, Pete Townsend told me that deciding to write a rock opera in 1969 was a desperate act.
When I got to Tommy, I thought, well, this isn't working anymore. You know, I did I Can See for Miles. It didn't hit in the UK. It hit quite well in the States. But I always thought it was going to be my kind of global number one. And it wasn't. It was just another song which was obviously charting our slow decline. And I went to Kit Lambert. I said, listen, I'm never, ever, ever going to be able to top this song. I can never write a better song than I Can See for Miles. What am I going to do? What are we going to do? And I don't know whose idea it was. I don't know whether it was Kit's, I've forgotten now, or mine, or whether it came out in conversation or whatever, but we decided to do an opera. It was a kind of a, you know, it felt not only a dangerous thing to do, but it did actually feel like a, you know, an exception to the rule. I actually felt that I was stepping outside my job. I was abandoning my rock and roll legion. You know, I was leaving my boys behind. Hi, this is Pete Townsend in the studio for the making of The Who's Tommy Part 1.
Like peeling back layer after layer of an onion, the many stages of development of The Who's iconic 1969 rock opera Tommy are further revealed, it seems, every time composer Pete Townsend cleans out a storage closet, and a complete 1969 live performance of Tommy, long thought to have been destroyed on the express orders of a petulant Pete as recently as Townsend's 2012 autobiography, Who I Am, has now been included with home demos as the definitive Tommy Deluxe and Super Deluxe editions. In May 1969, the rapidly expanding audience for the rock and roll counterculture already thought that they'd seen it all. The Beatles had followed their groundbreaking Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album with the prolific Double White album in 1968. The Jimi Hendrix Experience had obliterated any boundaries of the electric guitar by 1968's Electric Ladyland, also a double album. The Doors' Jim Morrison challenged the censor, singing Couldn't Get Much Higher on live U.S. television during the top-rated Ed Sullivan Show. And the Rolling Stones were cultivating a notorious bad boy, anti-Beatle alternative image that would a year later manifest itself as Witness to Murder at Altamont. But in May 1969, The Who's release Tommy would roll rock into a realm never before imagined, the rock opera. You see, until then, The Who were known as a singles band, with hits I Can't Explain, My Generation, and Substitute. Only one of The Who's first three albums sold well, so band manager Kit Lambert encouraged Pete Townsend to write thematically. Ironically, Pete Townsend told me The Who's 1968 single I Can See for Miles, that failure to top the charts was a huge blow to Pete Townsend's confidence.
When I got to Tommy, I thought, well, this isn't working anymore. You know, I did I Can See for Miles. It didn't hit in the UK. It hit quite well in the States. But I always thought it was going to be my kind of global number one. And it wasn't. It was just another song which was obviously charting our slow decline. And I went to Kit Lambert. I said, listen, I'm never, ever, ever going to be able to top this song. I can never write a better song than I Can See for Miles. What am I going to do? What are we going to do? And I don't know whose idea it was. I don't know whether it was Kit's, I've forgotten now, or mine, or whether it came out in conversation or whatever, but we decided to do an opera. And it was a kind of a, you know, it felt not only a dangerous thing to do, but it did actually feel like a, you know, an exception to the rule. I actually felt that I was stepping outside my job. I was abandoning my rock and roll legion. You know, I was leaving my boys behind. And writing this thing, which was actually very much trying to address what had happened around me in the late 60s, which was a drug revolution, a psychedelic drug revolution, which was producing something that people called, you know, peace and love. You know, I'm so cynical about all that stuff. I'm so cynical about it. I saw it from various different sides, and I had some nice times, but you know, so to some extent it was a desperate act, and to some extent a cynical act. You know, and to some extent also, a confused act. You know, I didn't really know what I was doing, and I didn't really know it was going to work.
Again.
The overture, which opens The Who's Tommy and incorporates the main musical themes of the rock opera, was actually written last by Tommy composer Pete Townsend, who told me how long The Who was actually in the studio.
About 3 months. But I mean, we weren't working all the time. It was just 3 months a period, you know, a period of 3 months. Because then I would go back and I would work in my studio. So it felt like recording for 3 months to me, because I would actually be producing 8-track demos at home. It wasn't 8-track, 2-track demos. I was still working machine to machine in stereo. It was solid work. It was expensive because we were in the studio a long time, but we weren't wasting time. It was actually just, it was a lot of work. You know, it's a lot. If you listen to it, it seems quite simple, but there was a lot of work in there. And it's like, we also recorded lots and lots and lots of tracks that aren't on the record. You know, I've got demos of songs that were intended for the album. I think one that immediately leaps to mind is a song called Kevin's a Model Child.
I certainly recall some mystery in the story when I first heard the album as a 16-year-old. I got tripped up very early in the storyline by the song 1921. You see, for years, I thought Tommy was born deaf, dumb, and blind.
No, there's a traumatic experience. He witnesses his father, who he's never met, returning and finding his mother with a lover, and witnesses the father shoot the lover, this lover who is, for all intents and purposes, Tommy's father. This stranger walks in, shoots his father, his stepfather or his surrogate father, and then claims to be his father and claims his mother, and that moment is bad enough, except that then what happens is that the parents, in desperation at this terrible, you know, accident, if you want to call it that, are afraid that the boy will give them away, that there might be some chance that they can say that the lover produced a gun or, you know, produced a knife or something, and that it was self-defense. And they rage at the child. They turn on the child in the heat of the moment, and they say, well, you won't say anything, will you? You'll keep our secret. You'll keep quiet. You'll keep quiet. You'll keep quiet. And the child's response is to be thrown into a deep trauma.
So you think 21 is gonna be a good year? Could be good for me and her, but you and her, no, never. I had no reason to be over-optimistic, but somehow when you smile I can brave bad weather.
What about the boy? What about the boy? What about the boy? He saw it all. You didn't hear it, you didn't see it. You won't see nothing, no one never in your life. You never heard it. How sad it all seems without any proof. You didn't hear it, you didn't see it. You never heard it, not a word of it. You won't see nothing to no one. Never tell a soul what you know is the truth.
Got a feeling 21 is gonna be a good year. Especially if you and me see it in together. Got a feeling 21 is gonna be a good year. Especially if you and me see it in together. I had no reason to be over-optimistic, but somehow when you smiled I could brave bad weather.
Coming up next, Tommy composer Pete Townsend reveals which song on Tommy he feels is the key to the storyline. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and hear more online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Pete Townsend in the studio for the expanded deluxe edition of The Who's Tommy Part 1.
Hello, this is Pete Townsend. In the studio for the anniversary of The Who's Tommy.
And I'm Redbeard, in the studio for the super deluxe edition of The Who's Tommy. There are so many different elements that make up the story to Tommy. I asked composer Pete Townsend if there was one song or moment in the story that he felt tied all the bits together.
You know, I think it was Amazing Journey. I think Amazing Journey was the song, and is the song that in a sense tells the story of Tommy in a kind of synopsis. You know, deaf, dumb and blind boy, he's in a strange vibration land. You know, strange as it seems, his musical dreams ain't quite so bad. You know, that's it, really. You know, it says it all. It's kind of... And that was the first song that I wrote. The very first.
Deaf, dumb and blind boy, he's in a quiet vibration land. Strange as it seems, his musical dreams ain't quite so bad.
Thank you.
will surely take the mind where minds can't usually go. Come on the amazing journey and learn all you should know. His eyes are the eyes that transmit all they know. Sparkle warm crystalline glances to show. He is your leader, he is your guide on the amazing journey to carry your life.
As Tommy's amazing journey gets rolling, at this point that Tommy is very much alone and isolated. Physically, he's still a part of his family, but he can no longer express his feelings or desires to anyone. Ironically, Pete Townsend believes this is the essence of what rock and roll is all about.
Rock and roll is about the moment that you become alone. the moment when you grow up, the moment when you leave home, or the reference I always give now currently is that East of Eden moment where Jimmy Dean is facing his dad across the room, and he's about to leave, and it's all in his face. He can't speak. It's like a great kind of My Generation stuttering moment. He can't say what he wants to say, but interestingly enough, neither can his father. His father can spill out invective, call his son a creep, tell him he's got to get a job, you know. And then there's this thing with the mother, you know, who wants everything to be right. That moment is what rock and roll is about, you know. That at that moment, whether you stay or whether you go, you are from that moment alone. You have no protection anymore. Your family haven't disowned you, and you haven't disowned your family. You might still have a relationship, but from then on, you are an adult. You will never, ever not be alone again. And that's what rock and roll is about. Rock and roll is about that moment.
Did you ever see the faces of the children? They get so excited. Waking up on Christmas morning, hours before the winter sun's ignited. They believe in dreams and all they mean, including heaven's generosity. Parcels are for free in curiosity. And Tommy doesn't know what day it is. He doesn't know who Jesus was or what day it is. How can he be saved from the eternal grave? Surrounded by his friends, he sits so silently.
See the faces of
And that moment actually, I think, tends to happen to most boys at around 16 or 17. And for some girls, as early as 12 or 13. That's my current thinking. And one of the things that I find deeply satisfying about it is that it actually explains to me a lot of the effectiveness of Tommy within the rock genre. You know, I thought Tommy was going to exist outside rock and roll, but it was so readily welcomed into rock and roll as a rock and roll piece. And I could never quite work out why. And I think it's because it itself is a part of that definition. It is actually, rather than being a metaphor for, you know, the Tommy being deaf, dumb and blind, is it a metaphor for, which is how I wrote it, a metaphor for our spiritual ignorance and isolation? Or is it actually a metaphor for how you feel when you're a teenager? You know what I mean? It's, you know, you feel really calm. And I think that maybe it's the latter. Is what made Tommy successful. That even if people weren't interested in spirituality or Maya Barber or Sufism or, where LSD or drugs or extraordinary, extrasensory experiences were going to take you, even if they weren't interested in that, they knew what the basic story was about.
Coming up next, Tommy encounters Cousin Kevin and the Acid Queen. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and hear more online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Pete Townsend in the studio for the expanded deluxe edition of The Who's Tommy, Part 1.
Hello, this is Pete Townsend in the studio for the anniversary of The Who's Tommy.
Thanks, Pete. I'm Redbeard. As it turned out, the topics in Tommy of child molestation and bullying proved simply too close to his own painful reality for Pete Townsend to compose. So The Who's bass player John Entwistle tackled these forbidden lyrical subjects in Fiddle About and Uncle Ernie's Sadistic Son, Cousin Kevin.
You know, a lot of people have said to me, oh, well, you know, the interesting thing about Tommy is, of course, now that it's all, you know, it's discussed openly and everything now. You know, I think it was then. It just wasn't kind of what hadn't happened then is I don't think that victims had come forward ready to tell their stories. But I think we all knew that it happened. You know, we'd all experienced it. You know, we actually, you know, we knew what it was. We knew that the shades of things that had happened to us as individuals must have had more extreme manifestations with other people, you know. And a few things that happened to me when I was young, I used to think, well, you know, if that hadn't have stopped where it stopped, where would it have led to? You know, and I think everybody kind of has been down that pathway. Or spoken to people, you know, you told a story, you say, you know, well, you know, I was, you know, in the scout camp the other day and the scout master came in and his trousers were off, and somebody will say to you, well, that's nothing. What happened to me was, duh, 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 duh. And then you kind of hear other stuff and you think, well, if that's true, then that's heavy. So I grew up with that stuff. You know, I think now it's just that it gets on the TV. Cousin Kevin's actually about bullying, isn't it, too? It's meant to be about the insensitivity of the bully and how we all bully, you know. And we bully because it's the style in which we're expected to grow up. We're expected to be bullies. It's cool to be a bully, you know. Still, you know, society tells us to be bullies in business and in relationships and, you know, feminism, you know, post-feminism is about anything. It's about trying to get over the fact that early feminism was about, you know, we can be bullies too. You know, we don't actually have to be secretive and scheming to get control of the family. We can just demand control to avoid controversy. And, you know, in the male world, bullying is a function of life. And it's the way that you get things done. And it's horrible and abhorrent, but that's the fact. And it starts when you're a kid.
We're on our own, cousin. All along, cousin, let's think of a game to play. Now the grown-ups have all gone away. You won't be much fun being blind, deaf and dumb, but I've no one to play with today. Do you know how to play hide and seek? To find me it would take you a week. Tied to that chair, you won't go anywhere. There's a lot I can do with a freak. How would you feel if I turned on the bath?
After sadistic cousin Kevin, Tommy comes upon the Acid Queen. Pete Townsend chose the character to be a gypsy, so I asked Pete what he knew about gypsies at that time.
Well, my family has got some gypsy blood. My mother's mother, my grandmother, was born of a gypsy girl who her dad had left his wife with two children to pursue this young gypsy girl. And that is part of the strain of my family. And my grandmother used to do magic stuff. She used to put curses on people and they would die, you know. The other thing, really, I think, is that wandering thing. I wanted to kind of create this idea that the Acid Queen was a wanderer, like a singer, or a, you know, rather than a whore, you know, somebody who, there was a craft, like a minstrel or something, some kind of black art.
If your child ain't all he should be now, this girl could put him right. I'll show him what he could be now. Just give me one night. I'm the gypsy, the Acid Queen. Hey, before we start, the gypsy, I'm guaranteed to tear your soul apart. Give us a room, close the door. Leave us for a while. Your boy won't be a boy no more. Young but not a child. I'm the gypsy, the Acid Queen. Pay before we start. The gypsy, I'm guaranteed to tear your soul apart. Clutch. Watch his body rise. I'm the gypsy, the Acid Queen. Hey, before we start, I'm the gypsy. I'm guaranteed to break your little heart.
Acid Queen. You know, for all the story of Tommy, it's interesting to note that Pete Townsend wrote the rock opera, first and foremost, with the intention of The Who playing it live on stage.
In a sense, everything that I did always had, if it was written for The Who, it was obviously going to be a stage piece. We were a performing band. We weren't a studio band like the Beatles had become, you know, and so that was the distinction that I would make to myself. is that we can't do a Sergeant Pepper type thing. We can't do a Pet Sounds type thing. We can't do a studio masterpiece. We have to do something that we can play. That's why Tommy is so simple. That's why it's so unorchestrated, so unscrewed around with in the studio. We had wonderful people to work with and lots of technology available by the time we were in the studio. And, you know, and I was a killer technician. You know, I'd actually I've had my own recording studio since I was 17 years old. I know that stuff. We kept it really simple because we wanted to play it. So in a sense, although it was recorded, and composed for the stage. It had to work live.
Deaf, dumb and blind boy, he's in a quiet vibration line. Strange as it seems, his musical dreams ain't quite so bad.
Guide on the amazing journey together.
Amazing Journey, performed by The Who, from 1969 at Wembley Arena. I know it does seem improbable, but almost 45 years after the release of the world's first rock opera, it keeps getting better. Every time Pooh soundman Bob Pridens cleans out the closets, more of Tommy's conception, gestation, and birth are revealed, such as now on the deluxe and super deluxe editions, including more of Townsend's home demos and this miraculously preserved complete 1969 concert performance of Tommy, the tapes of which only recently Pete himself had reported as being destroyed back then on his specific orders. In the 1990s, Tommy would make its way to the Broadway stage with Pete Townsend in a music supervision role. I asked Townsend what it is about Tommy that keeps the rock opera a viable property.
Well, I think it's partly because of the story. I think it's partly because it has a story. But, you know, I think also because the music has the ability to last. You know, it's some of my best work. And it has a kind of, if it's not truly thematic, the writing musically, it certainly has a spirit. You know, I do think that I've been very smart about Tommy, about the way, you know, Kit Lambert and my lawyer registered a grand right for Tommy, which means that nobody can perform it or any part of it without my express permission, not even a school or a brass band. You can't play it on the street without my permission. So it's actually enabled me to control that in a way that I couldn't control, for example, say The Who's catalogue. I can control Tommy. I think it's also survived because The Who have always made it a centrepiece of their live performance.
That's just the midway point of our two-part tribute to The Who's Tommy and the deluxe and super deluxe editions with our guest Pete Townsend. I'm Redbeard.